I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, February 20th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:34 p.m. Today we have President, Vice Chair Senator Reitbold, Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes, and Senator Machicki will be joining us momentarily. Please silence your cell phone. Thanks to those. As always, we are so grateful for your assistance, Senate records, and the legislative information aid and our committee aid. We have two items on today's agenda. First, the committee will hear the uniform crime reporting presentation from the Alaska Department of Public Safety. Following that, the Alaska Judicial Council will give a presentation on the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission crime data, including information on sexual offenses, case processing, which we asked them to emphasize since we were working, have been working, and still are working on two bills related to sexual crimes. So first, I'd like to invite Kathy Manfreda, the Chief of the Criminal Records and Identification Bureau, and Michael Duxbury, Deputy Commissioner for Department of Public Safety, to the table, please. Oh, that is not Deputy Commissioner Duxbury.
Nope.
So I will let you introduce yourself. Please put your names on the record and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Catherine Manfreda. I'm Chief of the Criminal Records and Identification Bureau for the Alaska Department of Public Safety.
And for the record, my name is Lisa Purinton. I'm the Criminal Justice Planner with the Department of Public Safety.
I'm sorry, and Lisa, I didn't quite catch your last name. What is it again?
Purinton.
Purinton?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Go ahead and
begin.
Okay, so today we're going to, for the record, my name is Kathy Manfreda. I'm going to give a little talk about the Uniform Crime Reporting Program, where we are today, where we're headed, and then after that, do a little bit of a presentation on our felony sex offense reporting that we do on an annual basis. Lisa is my secondhand man, and she, if your questions go into the weeds, you'll be able to answer those that I'm not able to answer, which is why she's here. So Uniform Crime Reporting, or we call it UCR, is a nationwide data collection effort headed by the FBI to meet the need for reliable uniform crime statistics nationwide. 18,000 law enforcement agencies throughout the country participate in the program, and in Alaska we have 32 agencies reporting, which represent 99.5% of the state's population. State and local agencies report to the Department of Public Safety, which is the central repository for this data, and we manage the program and forward it, the data that we collect, to the FBI for the annual Crime in the United States report. We also, the program also provides training and conducts biennial audits to ensure the accuracy and uniformity of the data. Like I mentioned, Lisa manages this program, and the program is one person. So just wanted to get that on the record. It also creates, like I said, the Crime in Alaska publication, which is used by agencies throughout the state. So since the 1930s, we've used a system called summary reporting, or SRS, that's been used throughout the country. It's a summarized view of incident. It's got very few reporting elements. The arrest is not necessarily linked with the original offense. And what I mean by that is we will know there were 25 thefts in a given agency, and there was maybe 12 arrests, but we cannot link which one of those 25 initial reports were resulted in an arrest. We're in a process of transitioning to the national incident-based reporting system, which is called NIBRS. NIBRS has been around since the 1980s. It's much more robust in what the data elements that are collected, and we can do a much more in-depth analysis on crime. I'll be talking a little bit more about that in a minute. It's been around since the 1980s. It's not been widely used. I think right now there's about 30 states that actually report NIBRS. By January 1st, 2021, there's been a mandate that all states report NIBRS to the FBI. They will no longer be collecting SRS. I say that with a caveat. We're pretty sure that not each of the 50 states are going to be able to comply. In particular, California is probably not going to comply. So the FBI will likely still continue to take SRS after a summary reporting after January 1st, 2021. Alaska, however, is on track to be ready to report as of January 1st, 2021.
And Kathy, just for my sake and for the listening public as well, you know, as we've said, sometimes we ask for the public, but it's really because we need to know. We are reporting on the things that are charged, not necessarily the arrest, and also not necessarily how something was sentenced, but actually what's happening on the street and what the charges are. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, it's crime reported to law enforcement. So, there's no correlation to the final outcome of the case other than an arrest may be reported. But like I said, it's not correlated to that actual incident. We know how many crimes were reported. We know how many arrests were made.
Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. So I'm getting quite a few complaints in my area where they'll call and the cops are like, no, we're not coming out. There's nothing we can do because of SB 91 and all that kind of stuff. And it is happening at rampant levels. So my question to you is, when they call to report, is that actually getting in the database, or is it wait till there's a report, or does a cop have to show up? A lot of people in Citizens Reach are giving up. They don't even want to call anymore because they're so frustrated with our police department, you know, washing their hands of responsibility and not showing up. So, you know, and I know there's probably a lot of stuff going on, but they're being told a lot to just go fill something out online or whatever. And maybe that's efficient, but maybe it's not getting reported accurately. And I just want to know.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, the answer to that is maybe. The rule is that if it's known to law enforcement, they must report it. Whether or not they actually report it, we train them to report it. But whether or not they actually do it, I don't know. We don't know what we don't know, right?
Follow-up, Senator Reinbold.
Can we audit that? I think it's critical. There's enough complaints out there that I think we need that audited, because I've been told that it's not all getting reported. So, and I can't prove one way or another, but I think that needs to be audited. And I don't know if that would go through ledge budget and audit. I'm not sure, but I think it's an important enough issue, and enough frustration. It's right. Pretty frustrating out there right now that I think it's an important enough issue to investigate.
And through the chair, Senator Reibold, we do audit each of those 32 agencies every 2 years. Like I said, we have one employee that handles both the audits and the collection and reporting of the crime statistics. I think we can say pretty certainly that crime is being underreported. I've heard the same thing of people just not bothering to report it. I don't know how we would audit that. If they don't report it, we wouldn't know who they are to go check into that. But like I said, we do audit, when we train, we do train the police agencies to report it if it's known to them. If it's reported and they fill out a paper form online, that should be reported in the statistics.
So to clarify, law enforcement is trained and required if a call comes in, and that data would be collected if they're following that. And that's a separate thing from whether a person in the community is deciding whether to pick up the phone and make the call, which is very hard to measure that. But law enforcement is required to report, and it would be included in what you're talking to us about, as long as they're following that requirement. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
No, I was just going to just go back to quality control there, because I know all these people aren't just, you know, making stories up. You know, there's some real serious issues, and you just said that it is being underreported. And so I think that it's a very, very serious issue right now, and that we need to just make sure that there's some quality controls in there. And I don't know if it's APD, but that's the one I'm hearing about. You know, what's going on? What is their policy? What is their procedure? What are people to do when they're frustrated because they're getting, there's nothing we can do to help you because of X, Y, and Z, SB 91, IE?
Through the chair, I think education of the public is key. Education of law enforcement agencies are the key. Mm. You know, we need to let them know that they need to report this. We can't do anything about what we don't know.
But I just want to say again, to assure the public, that if they made a phone call, and even if the law enforcement officer said our hands are tied due to a change in the criminal statute because of SB 91, that their call to report something should still be reflected in this data. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Continue, please.
This is a sample of a difference in what is collected in the summary reporting, or SRS, the National incident-based reporting, NIBRS. For an example here, a 28-year-old female contacts law enforcement to report she was sexually assaulted by her ex-husband the previous evening. Law enforcement investigates and a suspect is arrested. Under summary reporting, we would report only one rape offense and one arrest, and there would be no correlation, like I was mentioning earlier, between the arrest and the reported offense. Under NIBRS, we'll be collecting that one rape was reported. We'll have information on the age, sex, race, and any injuries to the victim. We'll have this information on the age, sex, race of the offender, as well as if any weapon was used or force was used. We'll know the relationship between the victim and the offender. We'll know the time, date, and location of the offense, suspect if drugs or alcohol was involved, and also the date of the arrest.
So. Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Monfreda, and this is a treasure trove of additional data. It also sounds like a lot more work for local law enforcement, well, any law enforcement, to enter. Is this a better capture of information that's already in everybody's system, or is this really additional effort for police agencies over and above going out and investigating the crime itself?
Through the chair, yes, it's additional information to collect. In many cases, this information is being collected today. It's just not being reported to us. So there is a level of effort on the part of every law enforcement agency that must change their systems. The records management systems that are much more automated than when in the 30s when it was all written on a piece of paper and somebody did it. Tick marks is how they actually reported it when I started out. They can program their computers so that when they fill in the right blocks, this information is generated and it can be correlated. And almost all of the records management system vendors that we know today are all well aware of this requirement to report NIBRS data and are working on that and working with each of those law enforcement agencies.
And a follow-up.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, do you have a sense of the penetration of those record systems in Alaska's small departments? I mean, I've got, you know, law enforcement agencies with 55 badges and law enforcement agencies in my district where you can count the badges on one hand.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, what we at Public Safety have done is we have two potential solutions for those small agencies. One is that we can offer them the use of our records management system, the state troopers record management system, which is called ARMS, Alaska Record Management System. We are in the process of converting the collection of data from the summary reporting to the which is actually basically by hand right now to the NIBRS reporting. We will allow those agencies to use our system with their own and collect their own data. The second way is we are building a repository for all of the agencies to submit to us. And one of the things, especially for the small agencies that will have a small number of incidents to report in any given month, is they'll be able to directly enter into that repository at no cost to them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Continue.
So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the crime in Alaska that for 2017. It was, as everybody kind of in their gut knew, crime in Alaska went up pretty significantly in 2017. Violent crimes in every category, murder, rape, robbery, and assault all went up. And property crimes, everything other than arson, also went up. Vehicle theft went up almost 40%.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're getting to it. I think this is what a lot of people want to see. This is the big question, right? How's crime doing? How is SB 91 performing? We talked before, pre-SB 91 wasn't necessarily working. SB 91 is not necessarily working. What the heck do we need to do to make this work? That's not the crux of my question. However, when you go through this, as you talk about the pros and cons, I'm just going to ask one thing to keep it moving, is can you, as you string this together, the trend data, can you kind of also expound a little bit for ourselves and the public as what that data is doing? So like from 2016 to 17, check, it's going up. But generally speaking, what is our trend items? How is it looking? Because I want to tie this together to both pre and post SB 91 for the whole story. So as you do this, if you could flavor it a little bit broadly, please. Thank you.
Through the chair, in upcoming slides, you'll see we do exactly
that. Copy that. Thank you.
So the chart I just showed you initially, that was the number of crimes that were reported. These charts are reporting the rate of crime. So rate of crime is defined by how many crimes per 100,000 of the population. So you can see in the violent crimes, Alaska is higher than the average in the nation. And went to your question, Senator Schauer, you can see when the murder rate crossed the line was started about in 2013, the rape rate has always been higher than the national rape. You can see the dotted line where the blue dotted line where it's gone up in 2013. That was due to the fact that for the first time in years and years, the definition of rape was changed to include male subjects and penetration of other body parts. So nationwide, the rate went up because we began collecting information on sexual assaults of people that were not previously reported. The robbery rate looks like about 2015 is when we crossed the national average, or the national rate, I mean, and again, aggravated assault has always been higher than the national. For property crime,
I'm sorry. Before you go back to slide six, please. The rape rate, you said it was going up because the change of the definition of rape changed to include both genders. So nationally, you saw a very slight incline, but a considerably higher incline in Alaska. Do you attribute that all to that change of definition, or could there be other factors in Alaska as our sexual crime rates have been worse in the nation for some time? So I wouldn't think that change in definition was the sole reason we see a steeper climb in Alaska.
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the why it changed. I know that was when the definition changed. It is a pretty significant jump up. I don't know if it was maybe Ms. Perrington can give a little more insight into that.
Madam Chair, Lisa Perrington, Department of Public Safety. When we looked at the data in 2013, the national average at that time was about a 35% increase on the numbers due to the definition change, and so part of it could be the graph scale that doesn't kind of reflect that. But when we looked at it, we were very fortunate that the Anchorage Police Department continued to report their rape numbers under the historic definition as well as under the new definition. And given the volume, unfortunately, of the crimes that they have for rape in the Anchorage Police Department, we did see that 35% correlation. So I think part of it is just on the scale of the graph that maybe doesn't reflect that, but we did see it was about a 35% increase statewide that was due to the definition change, and that was mirroring what they were seeing at the federal level.
And going back to 2011, in Alaska, there seems to be, there was a dip and then a upward trend. Can you explain what that was between 2011-2013?
I cannot say definitively. My guess is that's about the time frame when we started implementing audits with the law enforcement agencies and training with the law enforcement agencies. As Ms. Monfreda mentioned earlier, education is key to understanding this, and it was around that time frame, and I'd have to go back and check for specific notes on theirs. That's when we started doing the statewide training with the law enforcement agencies and started implementing the biennial audits with the agencies as well.
Thank you. Senator Schauer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I might look for a head nod from a little further back in the room potentially for this question, but I had noticed the murder rate spikes as well around 2015. My understanding, talking to a lot of folks that I know in the law enforcement community, a lot of that, because our homicide is mostly centered around Anchorage, the gang things that were happening with the drug trade is a lot of it. And I see that it spikes then, and I know we had the opioid crisis. You have the gangs that are fighting each other over who's going to control the trade. That spike in murder seems to be about that time when that was happening. Is that, in fact, the case? In other words, what I'm leading to in this question is a lot of people think, oh, my gosh, homicide rates are high. But the reality is, outside of this kind of specific area, like in the city where the drug wars are happening between the gangs, your chances of homicide or being murdered are pretty low outside of those specific areas. And I have a follow-up with this on the second one, but does that, in fact, kind of track with what's really happening?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, I will defer to our counterpart, Deputy Commissioner Duxbury, on that question. I don't have that data in front of me at this moment.
I can wait to answer it.
Yeah, and we can have you come up, because I was wondering if any of this is broken out by region, and so that is definitely in line, because as far as the sexual crimes as well, geographically, if there's any breakout. Lisa, would you like to speak to that?
Madam Chair, the rates for each of these offenses, what we have before you is just the statewide totals. Each of the agencies will also have an annual total that's in our Uniform Crime Reporting Program, in our online publication that will have that data broken out for each of the it's not the by rate, obviously, because we have such small communities, it would be very hard to do it by the rate, because we usually look at the rates by 100,000 population, but those numbers for the individual communities, such as the Anchorage Police Department or the state troopers for statewide totals for them, or Bethel Police Department or any of the other departments will have their annual numbers will be posted online.
So you don't keep track of it. We'd have to go to the Bethel Police or the Wasilla Police or the Anchorage Police. You're not keeping it. Seems like it might, as policymakers for the whole state, it would be helpful for us without having to track it down through all those different police departments. Is you're bringing all this data in from the local jurisdiction. There's no way for you to, if we needed to know where's the worst problem with sexual crimes or where's the worst problem with murders, you have no way to give that information to us?
Madam Chair, this is Kathy Monfreda. We do publish it by jurisdiction. The entire Crime in Alaska for 2017 is 512 pages. So we're just giving you a synopsis of all the information that's available. And then further, we publish the felony sex offense report that also breaks down by census area that we're.
Okay, so you are able to give us, and Senator Reinbold had a question, and then followed by Senator Schauer.
I just feel like just for people who are watching, and I'm not sure if everybody in the audience has the crime in 2017, this is the first year after SB 91. We know you passed SB 64, which created the Criminal Injustice Commission. The state legalized marijuana in 2014 as well. But I really think that people need to understand who are watching that crime in Alaska in 2017, which was the first year after SB 91 full implementation, had already been starting to go up. But these numbers, murder 62, robbery 949, rape 1,073, assault 4,236. Arson, 139. Burglary, 4,153. Vehicle, 4,250, which the courts, you know, are not reporting it like that because there's same people who are doing it multiple times. Larceny, 17,583. So property crimes, 26,225. Violent crimes, 6,320. Total offenses, 32,545. And then you look at the number of violent crimes, and like you said, they've gone up in pretty much every category. And larceny and theft went up 67.4%, burglary 15%, vehicle theft 16%, assault 67%, rape 17%, robbery 15%. The statistics are as clear as day that it's gone dramatically. Crime has gone dramatically up in the state, like the people were telling us, and it was being denied over and over by massage data by the Pew Foundation and the Criminal Injustice Commission. So I'm just frustrated as heck. These are real numbers, and these are actual reported ones. And so I just think people need to be very careful of outside influences like the Pew Foundation that is massaging data to meet objectives that are misguided. And that's why I'm beyond thankful that you are here before us today reporting the actual numbers that have been reported. I do believe, like you said, it's being significantly underreported, but I cannot wait to see the 2018 numbers. So that's finally I got to my question. When are they going to be ready?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, our goal is always to have the report out as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. We are dependent on the agencies submitting the data to us so that we can do a check of it, audit it, make sure it's reliable, makes sense. Our deadline for them to get it to us is the middle of March. It'll take us another 2 months probably to take a look at the data and make the publication. Like I said, it's 500 pages long. And so hopefully by, my goal is as I want it by July 1st. We usually miss that by a couple, few weeks, maybe 6 weeks. So it's almost always out the middle of August.
And that, and Senator Reimbold has a follow-up, but that is on the Department of Public Safety's website for people to see?
Is that correct? Yes.
And also because Senator Reimbold is very passionate about the subject and very concerned for her community, I would like you to flip back because while to this prior slide, while she was reading some of that, the slide was not up. And the real column, and I think in her excitement, she was reading the percent of violent crime, but I want us to focus on the last column on the right on the chart because those show the increases. And at the vehicle theft was up almost 40%. And those changes from 2016 to 2017, I believe, are worth noting. We were seeing increases prior to that, starting back in 2011, 2013, but just really significant jumps between 16 and 17. So I just want the public to be able to see that chart if they don't have the PowerPoint. And Senator Schauer has a, on that point comment. So go ahead on that point, and then we'll go back to Senator Reinbold's
This
follow-up.
Is just to follow up with what you were saying, Madam Chair. If you do the numbers, it's interesting because you go per capita, how much are people affected? And most it's like, oh, per 100,000 doesn't seem like that much. But if I just take 32,500 offenses of all types and divide it, and it's not perfect, I get that, but just as a generic thought, and you go basically that's one out of every 23 Alaskans, one out of 23. Every year suffering some kind of crime. And if you go to my neighborhood, every person you talk to has somehow been touched by crime because it affects the community, right? So I just thought that was a fascinating number. Based on that, when you just divide by our population roughly, that's bad.
So. Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Reinbold,
And thank you, Chair Hughes. Yes, there's a couple different columns here. There's the number of offenses, which I was reading, then the percentage of violent crime, and then I did not go completely into the change from last year. So very, very good that you pointed that out. Vehicle theft went up, like you said, 40%. So just everything pretty much was up in every single category, except, like you said, arson. But if there's anything we can do as legislators to get that 2018 data, because there's this really bizarre force out there that's trying to massage the data and get us and saying SB 91 is working. Well, yeah, it's working for the criminal. We get it, you know. But I think that those that data, because we're doing the crime package now, there's anything we can do to get that data quicker. July's after session, we need it, especially if they're getting their hand tipped and able to massage the data and skew it to make it look like it really isn't the way, you know, that the normal average person would, because it's been massaged in bizarre ways.
Yeah. Senator Schauer.
Thanks. Same thing, the same vein of question for the, what is asking about murder. If you could also maybe flavor that data for the robbery rate, because that also starts to spike up again around 2014-15. Same thing with that kind of drug war question, the opioid crisis. Same kind of information I get back is that's when that started to spike. So if somebody could just, and I understand it may go back, if they could answer that question along the same vein. I'm seeing these spikes at certain times, and I'd like to know kind of the reason for that. And I ask that in the sense of the public understanding the what and the why behind the numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Continue, please.
Did we have any more questions? This is Kathy Bonfrieda. For the record, okay, so property crime, again, this is pretty much similar along the lines we've just been talking about, trending up in all crime categories.
And I just want to point out my faithful judiciary had reminded me to let the public know that if you're watching online or if you're watching on gavel to gavel, if you're having trouble seeing or if you want to review these, this document is on the Alaska State Legislature's website. If you Google that and then go to BASIS and look up today's meeting, you'll find this document.
This next slide is, again, this is Kathy Bonfrieda. This next slide is the number of drug arrests in Alaska from 2007 to 2017. And this is one area where it shows the crimes trending down. This is not a rate one. The gold green line represents possession of drug charges, and the blue line represents sales or manufacture of drugs. And in these cases, they're trending down. And you can see where in 2015, when the decriminalization of marijuana went into effect, just for your reference.
And that downward trend is surprising, knowing that the opioid problem is worse. We consider it worse now in the last few years. So can you tie that in and why it would be down when we know the opioid problem is an upward trend?
Madam Chair, I think that would be a answer better answered by the Deputy Commissioner, Captain from APD.
Yes, and I would ask those that are in the law enforcement community that will be coming up if they could answer that, and anything in this presentation that you would like to give your perspective as far as from law enforcement's view, we would appreciate it. And yes, and we also we know that possession was decriminalized too, and that would have kicked in to the right of those downward trends. But when we see it going down starting in 2011, it's quite interesting. Thank you. Senator Reinbold.
Yeah, and I think she's got a really, really excellent point there. And I also think that, you know, even overlapping this on how many drug overdoses, you know, there's been and the real problem that's going on in our state right now, this is really sad. We've got, I don't know how many parole officers, probation officers, pretrial officers, state troopers, federal agencies, APD, and every other, you know, we got lots and lots of people out there on the street. And to see this few, you know, 180 arrests in 2017, it's a joke, you know. And what I was told by the different prosecutors and law enforcement that I've talked to is they said there's just a little slap on the hand now, so it's not worth, you know, because of the foolishness in SB 91. Then basically what's going on now is it's not worth it because there's no jail time. You know, it's not worth all the time and energy to put the arrest through and get through because there's really no penalties. And then there's no motivation to get them into treatment anymore because there's no jail time hanging overhead that they can hold them so they actually have any motivation to get treatment. And that's why, you know, the streets are almost unrecognizable in our state now. So I think you got a really important point.
Okay, thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, when you talked about possession being decriminalized, that's marijuana only, right?
No, it was other drug classifications, and I'm not exactly sure of the effective date. Maybe you know that, Ms. Monfreda. So that what's shown on the dotted line, that's marijuana, but I'm talking about after SB 91, under 1 ounce, July 2016. So we're not seeing much of that line after 2016. Would you like to comment on that?
Madam Chair, I don't have any information on that.
Yeah, I guess we might have to wait till the 2018 data is out. Senator Keel,
Madam Chair, move from felony to misdemeanor or decriminalized?
I guess felony to misdemeanor, so maybe decriminalized is the wrong terminology.
Thank you.
Thank you for correcting me on that. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, one other caveat I want to make a point of is arrests are reported only as to the highest level of crime. So if a person had possessed drugs when they were arrested for robbery, that would not be reflected in these numbers because only the arrest for robbery would be reported. So that's, and we wouldn't know how many actual people that were arrested for other crimes more serious than possession of drugs were what's considered more serious in this hierarchy of crime statistics reporting, how many of those actually had a higher, more serious crime, and also possess drugs at the same time. Mm-hmm. Senator Reinbold was talking about these numbers a little bit. You can see these are the next few slides are the reportable crimes that from 2013 through 2017 and the rate of change by year. As you can see here, the murder rate has been steadily rising. With the exception of 2016, it was slightly down and then right back up in 2017. For rape, we had a drop in from 2013 to 2014. We can't really compare the rate for 2012 to 2013 because of the change in the rule, so we couldn't. It actually would have got. It shows that it raised, but it was raised because of the type of crimes that are being reported and the sex of the victims. the rape rate in Alaska is 249% higher than the national rate. And of the 1,073 offenses that were reported in 2017, 194 were cleared, 126 were people were arrested for rape. And of those, 79% were adults, 99% were male, and the majority of them were American Indian or Alaska Native, which was 60%.
Ms. Manfreda, some of us saw some of the articles that came out, and it was, because as I was doing some research last week, it was based on this set of data collected nationally where it compares all 50 states, and so some of the national news agencies were reporting it. It was based on this data collected that that we were the had the worst crime rate overall, sexual and otherwise, as far as the least safe state to live. I believe we ranked either 49th or 50th. Is that correct? And it was based on this report, from what I understand, and that collected by the 49 other states, correct?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I have not looked at that report, so I don't know. You have?
Well, I was looking at it this weekend, and it's the UCR that each
right.
state reports, and it's all collected, and then the national news agencies will rank all 50 states, and so we were ranked, I believe, 49th and 50th. One was for property crimes, one was for violent crimes, and it was worse for property. I can't remember. I don't want to say on the record. We took the two worst spots. It might have been 48th and 50th or 49th and 50th, but it was based on this data, so I just thought I'd let the public know if you've seen some of those articles comparing the states and where's the least state to live, it's based on the data that you're presenting to us today. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Manfreda, some of the information here in the narrative, it gets a lot more detailed than what you told us earlier was in the UCR reports. What's the source of that additional data about, you know, it was an intimate partner or killed by an acquaintance or that sort of information?
Through the chair, this is Kathy Manfreda. Could you repeat that? I'm not sure I understand what you're
asking. There's some additional information, Madam Chair, thank you. Some additional information here to sort of fill in some of this information, for instance, about murders in 2017. But I think earlier in the presentation you told us that UCR just said a crime was reported, and doesn't get into this level of detail. So can you fill me in on where does this level of detail come from?
Through the chair, it is reported through the crime in Alaska and the reporting agencies for homicide. There actually is a supplemental homicide report that tells us a little bit of information about the victim and the suspect if known, and what the mode of the murder was. That information is reported to us on a separate supplemental report. For robberies in particular, and burglaries, a little more detail is provided as far as what the weapon was. And for burglaries, is it in a residence? Is it in a business? Is it in a, you know, what kind of building was broken into? So that is reported. That's additional information that's reported only on specific crimes.
Okay, thank you.
And is it accurate, too, because I believe there's also annually a victim survey that's done it's separate from what you're reporting on, but some of the data as far as whether it was an intimate party, an intimate partner, that's collected through the victim survey that's also done nationally. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct, but that has DPS has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
At least our unit has nothing to do with that.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold.
So I just think it's super important for people listening that they get a real clear picture of what's going on in Alaska. So for murder in 2017, I'm going to start with 2013 and then go up to 2017. But murder in 2013, 34 murders. In 2014, 40 murders. 2015, 59. So there's a big jump in 2014 after SB 64 and the legalization of marijuana, the recession, etc. 2016, that's when it dipped a little bit, but it's far higher than pre-SB 91. That was 52. 2017, 62 murders. And I think it's important to look at some of the the statistics that 56% of the female homicide victims were killed by an intimate partner. I think that's important to note. When you transfer over to the rape in 2013, 919, 2014, 764, 2015, 895, 2016, 1,049, 2017, 1,073. And when you said the rate in Alaska is 249% higher, I'm assuming you mean the average rate. But what I want you to answer that question in a minute. But what very, very much frustrates me on all this is 7% of the offenses were attempted to rape. So 93%, it looks like, were actual rapes. While there were 1,073 offenses reported, only 194 of those were cleared for God knows what reason. I'd love to know why those 194 were cleared. But only 126 were arrested. 126. And of the persons arrested for rape, it gets into the details of that, but 60% of were Alaska Native or Indian, and I think that's a very important. There's a disproportionate number of Native American victims. Not to undermine that there's 40% of other victims in the state, but there is a higher proportional in the Native in Indian. But what Walt Monaghan said, why I passionately voted no on his confirmation, is only 1% of rapists end up in jail in this state, and he had no path forward. This to me is super, super serious. And that's why I think we've got to do things differently in Alaska. We're failing Alaskans. So if you could answer if that's 249%, is that the national average that you're referring to?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, the FBI collected the data from all 50 states and determined the rate on a nationwide basis. And on that, Alaska was 249% higher than the national average, which included Alaska.
Right, so just the word average is missing from there. And in my review of the reporting, the most recent National Victim Survey, 63% of sexual assaults and rapes are not being reported. That's national. So it would impact all those numbers, too, and that's one of the things with this committee and someone in testimony the other day made the point, and which I thought was a very good one, that if the better job we do getting it right as far as the sexual crimes, the more apt that people will report. And the goal, of course, with that is all about fewer victims and more public safety. So I think it's really important for us as committee to remember 63% of these rapes are not being reported, and we've got to turn that around, so, and hopefully reduce the number of rapes occurring. So thank you. And I want to be cognizant of the time because we do have another presentation, and so let's try to keep this going as a clip, and I'm as guilty as anyone at this table. So go ahead, Ms. Monfreda.
So just quickly then on the robberies and assaults, these are still person crimes. We are still seeing the trend upward. The 20% increase from 2014 to 2015 for robberies. The total loss of property from robberies was $850,000 that was reported to us. And of the persons arrested for robbery, 93% were adults, 84% were male, and the majority, 43%, were white. For assault, here's Alaska is 131% higher than the national rate, and we're seeing an increase every year in the rate of assaults. Moving to property crimes, burglaries were up not quite as much as they had been going up in 2017 compared to 2016, but still on the rise. A total of $10.4 million was stolen as a result of burglaries. Larceny or theft is also seeing an increase, with the largest increase between 15 and 16. The majority of the larcenies reported were from theft from a motor vehicle, followed by shoplifting. And the total property loss for larceny was $15.3 million. The majority of the people arrested were adults, male, and white.
And we don't have time to go through each of these and read as we did earlier as far as those increases, but if the public looks, our population has been declining recently, and all of these, they're jumping. It could be 10, 12%, 20%. As we said, vehicle theft was 40%, all climbing much, much higher rate than the population growth. So I encourage the public to look at the document and see those increases. Senator Reinbold, quickly.
Yeah, I just want 1 minute. I think it's so important not to go fast on this. There's nothing in my book, nothing in this building that's more important than what you're doing right now, including the presentation after you. But assaults are 2013, 3,096. Assaults in 2014, 3,224. Assaults in 2015, 3,654. Assaults in 2016, 3,992. Assaults in 2017, 4,236. People are being told that, oh, no, you don't know what's going on. You have to wait for the criminal justice commission. No, people were right all along, and they were being silenced. And that's why I think this is so important. The robbery, 620 in 2013, 627 in 14, 759 in 2015. 2016, 848, 2017, 949. So letting all these guys out on the street, it's causing harm to Alaskans. Being kept behind bars prevents them from creating havoc on Alaskans. Vehicle theft, 2013, 1,686, 2014, 1,730, 2015, 2,040, 2016, a huge jump, 3,049, 2017, 4,250. So I just think it's critical because I can't see those charts up there. So I don't know if gavel to gavel can see them, but that's why I thought it was really important to read them. It's such important information.
And I'm going to point out, as far as in addition to those percentages going up, the numbers going up, when I just quickly looked at the cost of some of these things, as far as, because we're talking, some of these are crimes against person and the impact of lives and what it takes for a person to recover. But the financial aspect for some of these property crimes, I quickly added up, it's hitting about $61 million in 1 year. And I know there's been some concern about the additional costs that it may take to do what we're going to do to try to make our communities safer. If it's impacting the public, those out in the communities by $61 million roughly, and that does not impact the lives and maybe the therapy sessions, et cetera, that people are paying for. I'm just talking about property, $60 to $61 million in 1 year. So continue, please. Oh, and yes, and the cost of insurance for individuals, we are hearing that because of these statistics, insurance companies are raising rates as well. So very, and that, so those numbers that I read did not impact. That was just the cost of the items that were, whether it was vehicle stolen or items stolen. So we're easily impact in the communities, 100 million would probably not be out of range. And I also want to note that Senator Maticki has joined us. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Continue, please.
I thought we'd move a little bit towards the felony sex offense reporting. This is a much more robust collection of data that we have begun. We started collecting the data after the legislature passed a law requiring us to do this report. It was passed in 2010. It took us some time to get a database built to get people educated and law enforcement agencies willing and able to submit this data to us. This is a list of the data elements that are collected: the age, race, and sex of a victim, the age, race, and sex of a suspect, the victim-offender relationship, the location of the offense, the potential charging statute, and if any weapons were used. So this, our first report was published in 2015. These two charts, and it is a little bit difficult to see the map of Alaska that's in orange shows that Western Alaska has a sex offense rate of 410.1 per 100,000 population, followed closely behind by Anchorage area, which is 251.7. The least reported area for sexual assaults is the rest of Central Alaska, not counting Alaska. That's a rate map, so that tells you per population the number of incidents reported, is on the circle chart with Anchorage having 50% of the sexual assaults reported in the whole state. Western Alaska follows with 21%, and others and other agencies are much smaller. Want to talk about the victims? In 2017, 47% of the victims were under 18, so they were juveniles.
Ms. Bonfreda, could you go back one slide really quick? The on the rate of felony. Oh, I'm sorry. It already says sex offense. Never mind. I was just thought that was all crime, and I just wanted to know if it was due to sexual crime, but it was. Thank you.
Yes, for the record, Madam Chair, this is talking about our felony sex offense,
yes.
And which includes all felony sex offenses, including child pornography and those type of offenses where
thank you.
The victim may not be known. So the median age of female victims was 19, while the most common age was 15. The median age of male victims was 13, and the most common age was 4. Alaska Native females were reported to have the highest victimization rate of any gender or racial group, comprising 42% of all reported victims. For the suspects in 2017, the median age of all suspects was 30, while the most common age was 18, and 85% of the suspects were over 18 years old, which means 15% were juveniles. 36% of the suspects were Native, 29% were white, 20% were unknown, which actually means they were probably not reported to us. They left that blank. 11% were Black, and 4% were Asian, Pacific Islander. For as far as the relationship between the victim and suspects, in the case of victims who were aged 1 to 10, 99% of the time they were known to the victim or were a family member or otherwise known. And in 2017, that 1% is actually less than 1%. It was one stranger molestation, one victim. And for victims 11 to 17, 61% were known to the suspect. Known to the victim and 39% were family member. That totals 100%. There were no stranger suspects. And then adult victims, 76% were known to the victim, 19% were family member, and 5% were stranger attacks. We collect information on what statute. If the person would be charged, what statute would be charged in that crime? This is a chart that shows the 2015, 2016, and 2017 numbers for sexual assault versus sexual abuse of a minor. We are looking into the reason for the dip in the sexual abuse of a minor in 2016. We think that relates to the way the numbers were being reported. Instead of reporting them as sexual abuse of a minor, they're reporting them as sexual assault, because the numbers still overall climbed, but we think there was maybe some misunderstanding in the community that was reporting this information to us.
Ms. Bonfreda, you said the most common location of reported offenses was a residence. Do you keep data on how many involved vehicles of the victim being transported by a vehicle?
Through the chair, Madam Chair, the vehicle data, if there was a secondary location, that is not data that would be collected. It's the data that's collected in the database would be the location where the event took place.
Okay. Do you know what the percentages that take place in the residence of the victim as opposed to elsewhere? Or could you get that information to us if you don't have it handy, please? We'll continue on while she's looking. Thank you.
Well, that was the end of the presentation. There's the URLs for the Crime in Alaska publications. The FBI has a system called Crime Data Explorer that actually is interactive. You can look at each state. You can look at all states. You can look at only particular types of crimes, and that's out there. And then there's my information about me and how you can get in touch with me.
Thank you very much. Did you find that?
So according to the reported, this is Kathy again, Kathy Bonfreda, 76% of the incident locations were reported as a residence. We do have other types, tribal lands, highway, road, alley, street, hotel, motel. We don't have the percentages broken out. We have the numbers. We can get the percentages if you want.
Okay. Well, I'm curious whether it's the victim's residence or the victim's being transported somewhere. That's my question. We can talk about that offline. Senator Reinbold, before we go to the next presentation.
I think this is the most important presentation of session by far so far. If it were up to me, I'd have you in every community, in every town hall. I brought you before our public safety meeting that Senator McChicky and Senator Schauer and Senator Hughes all helped co-sponsor. You did an excellent job. No one's happier than I am that you're there and have this data, and I think it's just so important. I'm absolutely on top of basis. I'm going to be posting this to my Facebook page, but I think it's really important for all those listening that to go to the DPS, which is Department of Public Safety, .alaska.gov, and then statewide RIUCR reports, and then also the FBI's crime data reporter, which is /crime-data-explorer.fr.cloud.gov. And it's super important. It's not as hard as it looks. I Googled it and found it. But you guys, this is fantastic data. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart, Chair Hughes, for having them here today and for y'all being here today.
Senator McChicky.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed the first part of the presentation. I will review it. I've gotten a couple of notes from my partner next to me that I must review it immediately. So, all right, how long have you been recording crime rates in Alaska?
Through the chair, I believe we have reports going back to paper formats that were in the 70s.
Would it be possible to get these rates for a longer span? What I'd like to do, I mean, we obviously have some interest in dramatically changing some of our criminal laws, but I'd like to try to understand those trends and what occurs in Alaska when those trends are increasing, like we're seeing right now. I know it's not the first time, although in some categories this is perhaps one of the worst periods of time. Do you have any understanding, can you share that with us on economic issues or other issues that are facing the state that lead to a higher crime rate?
Well, through the chair, the answer to the first part of your question is I believe the Justice Center at UAA has compiled. They took all of our reports and compiled rates from as far back as we could go, and I can get that information for you. As to the whys, I don't know that information. We're going to have the Deputy Commissioner possibly speak to some of those issues.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you. And next we'll ask to come to the table, Susan. Is it Suzanne or Susan? I'm sorry. DePetro, the Executive Director for the Alaska Judicial Council, and Captain Sean Case is accompanying her with the Anchorage Police Department. He's also a commissioner with the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. So welcome. Please place your name on the record and begin your presentation, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Suzanne DiPietro. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council, and the Judicial Council staffs the work of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. And I have with me Captain Case, who can introduce himself, but he is the local law enforcement member on the Criminal Justice Commission, and I'm going to ask him to make his remarks first, and then if there is any time left over, I can make a short presentation.
Thank you, ma'am. My name is Sean Case. I'm a captain for the Anchorage Police Department. I'm on the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission as well. For the police department, I'm a commander of the patrol division. So all the officers that respond to calls for service all work for me within the Anchorage area. The numbers that Ms. Monfrida presented are obviously quite interested in all of you seem to be pretty passionate about it. What I want to talk about a little bit is just put a couple of those things into perspective in terms of kind of what we're seeing on the street. I believe Senator McChicky kind of wanted Ms. Monfrida to look at some other societal things that were going on that maybe affect those numbers What are the things that influence? My background may be helpful to you. It may be boring, but I'll tell it to you real quick. I've been in law enforcement for 20 years, two different jurisdictions, one of them outside the state of Alaska. I'm a local person. I graduated from high school here. I've got a bachelor's degree from University of Alaska Anchorage in Justice. I've got a master's degree from Indiana State in Criminology. And I'm in my last full class with a master's degree at Penn State University. It's an industrial organizational psychology degree in the psychology of leadership. So I have a little bit different perspective than just a street practitioner. Stolen vehicles is one of the categories that we looked at in the UCR crime reports. And
I'm sorry, pause for a minute, Captain Case. Senator Reinbold.
I just think it's important to note that there wasn't a position for APD when the preliminary reports came out with the Criminal Justice Commission. That was something many people fought for, was a position for, and correct me if I'm wrong, but has the APD always been on this commission? That's my first question. And my second question is, where else were you a cop before you were a cop here?
Through the chair, the Anchorage Police Department was not the municipal jurisdiction that was on the Criminal Justice Commission at the time. SB 91 was researched and then eventually placed into legislation in 2016. And the jurisdiction was Los Angeles Police Department.
Okay, continue, please.
So stolen vehicles, obviously that number is extremely high. Many people throughout the state, and particularly in Anchorage, have felt the impact of a stolen vehicle. We all know that it's not just a piece of property that was taken. It's a means of transportation that gets you to and from places like work and doctor's appointments and transporting children around. Through the last couple of years, as some of you may know, we have increased our staffing levels within the Anchorage Police Department quite dramatically, around 100 new employees. If you go back several years ago, we had approximately 150, 148, actually, officers in patrol division within the municipality, and we started February with 197. So the increase of 100 officers on the police department, many of them went to patrol, many went to other areas like detectives. In 2018, we saw a 6% decline in stolen vehicles and an 11% increase in arrests for stolen vehicles. You may be aware that the stolen vehicle data was going up. We were seeing increases in stolen vehicles prior to SB 91. The numbers continue to rise through SB 91, and obviously the statutes that impact stolen vehicles have not changed since July of 2016. And so we're seeing a decrease in stolen vehicles as we speak. During the last 11 months, we've added resources to our detective division to look into these stolen vehicles. Over the last 11 months, we've seen that 55 of our arrestees are repeat arrestees, and 12 of them have committed three stolen vehicle offenses, and now we're actually starting to see four repeat offenders just slightly over 11 months.
Captain Case, for the sake of the public and for us as too as review, vehicle theft was on the rise, and then you mentioned it started to decline. So what would you attribute the decline to?
It was on the rise. It continued to arise until 2018 for us, for our local jurisdiction. And I would attribute that to increased staffing both on the street. Stolen vehicles are one of those types of crimes where increased police presence can have an impact because more officers on the street observe the stolen vehicles and then are able to apprehend the suspects once we see the stolen vehicle, as well as an increase in the detectives investigating the stolen vehicle.
Was not there an adjustment in SB 54 that addressed that change in the law? Senator Reinbold?
Yeah, that was the C felony. thank you very much. Excellent point. I'm the one that sponsored that legislation that actually allowed for jail time for the first time offense in vehicle theft. In Senate Bill 91, the first time vehicle theft, which is a C felony, there was no jail time offered. So I think that's a critical point. But, Chair, I really want to talk just really quickly when you allow me the time to talk about vehicle thefts. He's talking about from a very high number. So if you look at car thefts in 2014, let's start there, 1,730, 2015, 2,040, 2016, 3,049, 2017, 4,250. You know, so if you go from, it's more than double, I mean, it's probably approaching triple from pre-SB 91 levels. So a tiny dip from a really high number is really nothing to brag about. No offense.
May I make a follow-up?
Senator Schauer.
And I would add, and it, only because I'm curious how the numbers pan out, but last year in HB 312, there was an amendment added at the very last minute. And what that did was essentially, for all practical purposes, it kind of null and voided mandatory own recognizance chart that judges had to use. We gave them the authority to go virtually, you can basically take anybody and hold them if the judge decided that they needed to be held because of risk to the public, and before they were not able to do that. So, and I believe that was signed into law over the summertime, which means you'd have 6 months or so of data that would potentially be in allowing judges to take these people and hold them, where before they were being immediately released on the street, for, and many of those were involved in vehicle thefts. So a dip in that data may be because, partially, we don't know yet, because that was passed. We sat right here last year debating that, and one of the issues in this room was the fact that you had judges that were looking at somebody that would come back on their fifth, sixth, seventh time, failure to appear before the court for those type of offenses, and the judge could not hold them, was not allowed to, had to put them back out in the street, or they could do the same thing. So some of that was changed, and that might be affecting the data, and I think multiples of these may be affecting that. We need to wait and see, but I just want to point that out to everybody that may be part of causal reasons for why we're seeing the dip, potentially.
Thank you for that, Senator Schauer. So in increasing judicial discretion, a change in the classification, as Senator Reinbold mentioned, and what you mentioned, an increase in staff as far as getting out there on the street. So I just think it's important to acknowledge that all these factors, if we're starting to see a decline, we're glad we're starting to see a decline, but just want to point out that there were definitely some policy decisions made that very, very likely impacted it. So continue, please.
Madam Chair,
Senator Michicki.
Sure. So we talked about the vehicle theft rate, which watched the rate increase from 230 to 577. So it essentially doubled in that 2013 to 2017. This is the rate, not the number of offenses. Why was there not a similar increase in burglaries, thefts, robberies? You would think there would be some correlation, but vehicle thefts really took off. What do you have a explanation for that dramatic change in just vehicle thefts?
Yeah, through the chair. Yes, what we found during that period of time where it started increasing was we were having the stolen vehicles were linked to primarily drug selling. And so you'd have people that were selling drugs that would use the cars as transportation. Also, they was linked to burglaries as well. So they would burglarize a home, take the car out of the home. And then, of course, we had, the number that kind of stayed consistent throughout, which was the crime of opportunity, where you leave the car running in the wintertime to warm it up and they steal a vehicle. But the big increase was using those cars for transportation as it was linked to drugs. Most of the people that are being arrested and interviewed have a connection to drugs.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michicki.
And just so we don't get letters of the folks that have had to put up with the thefts and the other property crimes, they certainly increased as well, but the vehicle thefts were sort of off the chart by definition. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Continue.
And we are seeing, just kind of back up what you mentioned, Senator Schauer, is that we are seeing situations where we are arresting people for vehicle theft, and they have one or two pending charges. So we're arresting them a third time before they've made it through the judicial process. We're still seeing that, even with 312 and the increased discretion with the judges that, where they've been opened up where they can hold them on bond. We still see that there's multiple pending charges, and we're making arrests for them as well. And some of these folks are relatively dangerous, and of course, catching people who steal vehicles, sometimes that results in a pursuit, which also increases the risk to the public as well.
Thank you for that.
But I want to go back to the work that we did, because I certainly don't want to not give some of the men and women that did a lot of work some credit here, because a lot of time and energy and resources have been invested in, and I do believe that these men and women did contribute to some of the decrease. You know, and over the last 11 months, detectives have come out and conducted 532 interviews of 453 different individuals, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to try to, you know, increase, you know, kind of link the connection between, if it's not just a one-off, you know, multiple people committing multiple crimes within those vehicles and putting cases together. It's also resulted in 1,262 total charges. So I do believe that's a pretty important data point that hopefully people understand that definitely contributes to that decrease.
Yeah, we absolutely appreciate the work of the law enforcement officers. Senator Reinbold had a question.
Yes, and I mean, everybody likes to see a decrease, but people need to understand that it's from a really, really peak number, and so anything that's being done to decrease it is good. But what I wanted to state is that the pretrial risk assessment tool was letting people out. That's one of those goofball things that came out of SB 91 that's a complete failure. No jail time for first-time C felonies, and examples are arson and stealing of a firearm and stealing a car. You know, those are C felonies and the first-time offenses. That was one of the crazy things in SB 91. No jail time for felons was absolutely ridiculous. Dramatically reducing sentencing pretty much across the board. And then having 8 to 9 ways, if they were by chance convicted and sentenced and put behind bars, there was 8 to 9 ways for them to get out of jail. One of those ways was eliminated in SB 54, as well as you could get 0 to 2 years for jail time now for your first-time offense for a C felony. So House Bill, or Senate Bill 54 did help. I'm sure this is helpful too, but people need to know that the statistics are still dramatic and impacting Alaskans' life immensely. And we're moving in the right direction, but we need to go a whole lot faster. It's just too slow in my book.
Okay. Senator Keel, and then we're going to hold questions and let you plow through as much as you can get through, okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question would be, you know, the other adjustments in 54 and in 312, especially with the discretion, have we seen the same drop-off in all the crimes that those addressed? Or has it been where law enforcement has focused resources, like vehicle theft?
I'm going to, based just on what Ms. Montrita presented it, I mean, it appears that crime continues to rise in the state of Alaska, at least from the 2017 numbers. And our property crimes in Anchorage are not significantly being dropped, with the exception of our vehicle theft numbers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just echo your thanks to the people of law enforcement, where they put the resources is making a big difference.
Yeah, thank you. Continue, please.
I want to contrast the stolen vehicle a little bit with shoplifting. Again, another property crime, generally speaking, a shoplifting offense is a misdemeanor crime, so there's a difference between that and the felony crime of vehicle theft. Several times throughout the last couple of years, we have done, the police department, Anchorage Police Department, has done some details at local businesses in the Anchorage area targeting shoplifting offenses. It's costing these businesses hundreds of thousands of dollars throughout the years. And generally, we make many arrests, 20-plus arrests, each time we run one of these details. And so we took one of those details, and in 5 months later, we looked at what had happened with those individuals in terms of recidivism and kind of what their criminal history was. And, you know, what we found is that about 75% of the people that were released on their own recognizance that were arrested during one of those incidents resulted in a failure to appear warrant. We also found that on average, all the folks arrested for shoplifting had five prior misdemeanor arrests. 81% of these folks had prior drug and alcohol arrests. 90% of them had records, and 48% of those that were arrested on new criminal charges not related to the original shoplifting offense within the following 5 months. And so I think the point that I'm trying to make with contrasting both of these is that there's a drug element to both of these crimes. I mentioned earlier that it's the trafficking that contributes significantly to the stolen vehicles, and the shoplifting, it's more of the user. We talked a little bit about, in Ms. Marfrida's presentation, about some proposed legislation for having possession be bumped up to a C felony during this current session. And, you know, I will tell you that any drug cop or street cop in the state of Alaska will tell you that there is a benefit to having possession to be a felony for many reasons. The primary is it's difficult to get people to either participate into treatment or to provide information in long-term drug investigations if it's a misdemeanor crime. But with some of the changes and with our attempt to lower some of these numbers, I just always provide a little bit of caution. And that caution is because even though we have two property crimes here, we have drugs involved in both the property crimes, the criminal justice response potentially should be different with each one. And I don't mean blanket, because that's generally where we get into a little bit of trouble. Our stolen vehicle folks, generally, those are the type of offenders that probably need to spend some time in jail. Like they're probably going to need a little bit harsher penalties because of the crimes they're committing and because of their underlying problem is they're trying to make their – that's their business, right, to sell drugs, steal cars, sell drugs. Underlying problem here with some of our shoplifters is a drug nexus. Most commonly, it's either methamphetamine or some version of opioid. And so I guess that's just kind of the continuous plug that treatment is an important thing in the criminal justice system response to some of these folks.
Captain Case, can you please provide us that data that you rattled off regarding the shoplifters that you tracked? And didn't you say that 5 months later they were committing another crime? Did I hear that correctly?
Absolutely.
Most of them? And you did tie it into treatment, but, you know, they're out on the street, and as we've talked about, how strong these drugs are, there's going to be that propensity to commit another crime if as long as they're out on the street. So when it comes from a public safety aspect, we have to rethink and consider that treatment should be behind bars, in my opinion. Senator Reinbold.
It'll be really quick. You actually said something I really, really like, and that's why I want to highlight it. I think, you know, having possession, you know, if people are possessing it, what are they going to do? Are they using it? Are they going to sell it? What are they going to, you know, is it if they use it, then they're going to, what the law enforcement tells me is that they get an expensive habit, and then they have to go steal, you know, to and then it gets bigger. It goes to vehicle theft or assault or homicide. So everybody almost that I've talked to in law enforcement said, like you said, it was the nexus, was a dependency on chemicals. And that's why I think if they do get the felony, like you said, that research was showing that it could be a very good thing to have it a felony, then the prosecutors are more motivated to go after them, and the perpetrator is more likely to get treatment because they have jail time hanging over their head. So anyway, I really appreciate it that you said that. I actually documented the time because I'm going to use that. So thank you.
Continue.
I think just, ma'am, to kind of address that a little bit, I think the one thing that sometimes we're taking what I say as a blanket statement, you know, the jury's kind of out. You know, it just depends who you talk to. It's a 50-50. Are we going to put people in jail and force them into treatment, or are we going to divert them from jail and get them into treatment? And I can tell you there's models out there that both are effective. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is that a system that has a one-way only as a solution is probably not the best and most effective system, but one that's more responsive is probably going to get it. I'm not advocating that folks that get arrested for shoplifting never go to jail. That's not what I'm trying to push. I'm providing you the real data to just kind of illustrate specifically what some of the issues that we're seeing in the system, and so that hopefully the law changes that we make can address some of them moving forward so that we can have a better criminal justice response. I get the feeling here that everyone's looking at me like I'm here to defend SB 91. I'm simply trying to defend a justice system that's a little bit more all-inclusive, that's really going to be more effective, you know, all the way around. Some offenders, are very successful in treatment, some are not. Some are very successful in incarceration, some are not.
Okay, thank you. Does that conclude your remarks? Or one of the things I wanted to get was, Ms. DePetro, for you to get a chance to do your presentation, but we've got members who have another committee meeting they're going to have to go through, and I'm looking at it, there's just absolutely no way we can get through it. So we'll have to see what we can do as far as getting a chance, because I think there's important data. So do you have any just a remark you'd like to make? Because I want to bring Deputy Commissioner Duxbury up to respond to anything he's heard today.
Madam Chair?
Senator Machicki?
Just a question if we're having. I'm very interested in this report and discussion. Are we planning on having her back? This so important while we're dealing with crime bills, the five crime bills that we're trying to process, to have some data to discuss as well. So
absolutely, and that's when I saw that, that's one of the reasons we'll have to figure out how to do that. So we will be talking to you offline about that. But do you have any closing remarks just in general that you'd like to make? And then we'll bring Deputy Commissioner Duxbury up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Suzanne DiPietro for the record with the Judicial Council. Just with respect to the first part of my presentation, which was going to be about the processing of sex offense cases, I just wanted to alert you that the legislature asked the commission, the Criminal Justice Commission, to do a report on that, and the report will be coming your way within the next couple of months. And this information that I was presenting here is contained in that report, so you can look forward to that.
Right. Well, and we appreciate that. We don't really have a couple months, though, for some of that information. So we'll talk about having you back, perhaps. So thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate it. And Deputy Commissioner Duxbury, if you'd please approach the table and put your name on the record, please, and your affiliation. And just wanted you to give you a chance to make some comments about things that you heard today. Adding your perspective on behalf of law enforcement and on behalf of our troopers.
Madam Chair, Michael Duxbury, Department of Public Safety Deputy Commissioner. Prior to this appointment, 30-year trooper, a great deal of my time doing drug enforcement work, and the supervisor for the Drug Enforcement State Unit and also for the Alaska Bureau of Investigation. There are a number of things that were asked today, and Senator Schauer, through the chair. Interesting that the spikes and what seems like could be a correlation. I'm going to have to, and I don't want to seem like I'm being an apologetic person about the things too, but I'm not a scientist. I can tell you what the boots on the ground guys are saying to us, and I can tell you, because I've tried to collect a bunch of that, because we want to make those comparisons for you that say, here's where we believe there's going to be an interesting change for us. Just recently, Captain Chase relates to us the thought process behind an increase in the penalties for possession. If you think about opioids just in the term that you could have 2.5 grams with you, end up with a citation, if the system and its inertia that was developed under SB 91, there was an inertia that was developed, and that is, yes, we could arrest, but there are all these components to it that didn't make it sensible to make an arrest. We couldn't actually push somebody at that point in time that didn't have any amount of accountability that was going to be put on them that would make an impact on them to maybe seek treatment to assist us. So what that did for us is pushed drug enforcement, which if you look at the 2016 DEA's drug threat assessment, what they tell you is the thing that drives property crime in the nation, and I seem to have a backup with the stats that were taken and spoken about by APD, is the thing that drives property crimes of all types is heroin, opioids. The next substance was methamphetamine. The thing that drove, in terms of illicit substances, that drove violent crime was first methamphetamine, second opioids. So we are kind of conforming to those statistics. Correlation is not causation, but we can see a lot of correlation. One of the things we talked about in the UCR reporting by Ms. Monfreda was is there some correlation in the sex assault stats? She talked about a component of education. One of the interesting things in 2011, when we saw a dip, not causation, correlation. The correlation is we had a really robust program of through a previous administration on education and choose respect. So we also see some of those correlations with since SB 91, we had a drop in the amount of budgeting that was spread around. We also had an inability to sustain the educational part of it, that upfront stuff that is really important to teaching our youngsters how not to get involved. The next thing that was happening for us is the opioid crisis in Alaska, which is really our conduit for discussing with you how when we found opioids, we always found methamphetamine. And all that stuff is coming from across the border. We are not a place that makes hardly anything in terms of meth anymore. That doesn't happen. 2006 was a great job done by the legislature in helping us get a control on that because you put stuff behind the counter. But we still have a huge methamphetamine problem. It's almost five times as much methamphetamine as it is opioids, driving both crime and assault. So I have a lot to say. It's very little time at the moment. But as a boots on the ground guy, we ran into significant issues with what is known as, in the colloquial, catch and release. We were unable to make a dent in the quality of life issues that were driven by illicit controlled substance abuse and trafficking. We also got to the point where we started to see vehicles being stolen by people who were on a lower level of use and were selling vehicles for $300 to their person so they can get $300 to utilized so they could use. The addiction is terrible. We have to have an ability to look at something and have some compassion about the addiction level, but the victims were really impacted. And one of the situations that people thought was 2.5 grams was something that you could carry around and you wouldn't deal. We don't find hardly anybody that doesn't take that 2.5 grams of heroin. It is 25 doses, and if it has fentanyl, there's a lot of impact, possibility of killing people. Take a few of those doses, they're not holding it in a pill bottle and, you know, dosing themselves daily, and sell the rest of them so they can live for the day and then again tomorrow get some more or later on in the night. So what that caused is our ability to make an impact on when you're getting the complaints, and you guys do. I know that the constituents call you and say, hey, we have a crack house or we have a meth house or we have a drug dealer on our street. If you can't make an impact on a guy that's only got a little bit of illicit substance with him, then having your granddaughter, I have one, drive up and down the street in a place where there's that kind of traffic and you're worried about it, or your wife or spouse going to the store and somebody that's looking to make a deal in the parking lot needs some money from the next closest source, those are quality of life issues. So we have a bifurcated issue, and it's really important that we get a chance through the bills that are out to make a difference in it. But I am unable to, and not a scientist, I can tell you what our guys are going through, how many times they see crime, and I've actually collected some stories that I might be able to share with you at some time. But we'll see the crime and have that person go in, not spent any time, and then three and four times committing crimes within 10 days. It also provides this inertia, and that is when the public doesn't believe we are helping them, our young men and women that are there who raise their hand to do what other people can't, won't, or shouldn't get demoralized. And therefore, not every time that you heard, I can't come out and do something, was it maybe always correct, but it did build that inertia within the whole system, because then a prosecutor wasn't always available, not on a Friday, right? And then it's more than the resources that they can put towards actually making a prosecution, because I have an increase in all this crime. I have an increase in person-on-person hurt and crime. How do I deal with a drug crime? We ran into issues where prosecutors didn't have the time to actually take care of even ounce cases. We would run into people that are taking 8 ounces to a village of out in western Alaska in Nome and also have an ounce of methamphetamine with them, have been involved in the system, arrested for drugs, and within 30 days back on the street, engaged in the same process again. So there was institutional inertia that was developed by an inability for us to use the discretion and the tools that we used to have. And that is the major impact that SB 91 made on us.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, and for that overview and how you perceive the problem and why the legislation that we're working on this committee is so important. But I wanted to ask you something specific to today's hearing, and that is regarding the reporting that Ms. Monfreda overviewed with us. When a trooper was stretched and maybe couldn't respond to a call, was that data being reported and collected and reflected in the reports? And then also, as a former trooper yourself and working with the troopers in the department, do you have any sense on the number of calls maybe that people were not making because of their frustration? In other words, the report that we just overviewed for 2017, maybe could we safely say it's a little low because some people were not calling and reporting things?
I have had it said to me as both a commander and a person that was also responding to calls that you take in the office on a daily basis. So we have, there's always a trooper that in the main office in Anchorage. And we would get information from people that just say, we're sick of actually saying anything about this or telling anybody what's going on because nothing gets done and they're just back out on their end. We have people that call us, and I've fielded these calls, that said, I'd rather do something on my own. And I think some of that was evidenced by some of the individuals in Anchorage who decided to start their own patrol units, right? So I think very accurately, it's hard for me to tell you numbers. To tell you anecdotally what my experience was, yes, people were stopped calling us. People were getting frustrated with us. People were blaming us for part of that increase because we are the first person you see in a critical and an acute situation. Your emotions are high. You've just been victimized. And this guy standing in front of me is telling me little to no ability for me to get some reciprocity out of this situation, right?
And the other first part of the question, as far as when calls came in, do the troopers report it into the database so that it's reflected? Do your troopers do that even if they are not responding? And then if you could shed light on whether you think the local police departments are also consistently reporting even if they don't respond.
For the most part, my understanding and my work with local police departments are they collect information as the calls come in for service. That information is then captured in the information that is part of what becomes, because not all information goes into the OCR, but it is captured. That is my understanding of it.
Thank you. Senator Reibel?
And Chair Hughes, thank you for having Mr. Duxbury up. In the popularity when SB 91 was passed, you became one of my heroes because you saw the impacts of what it was going to have and on the front line of what 2.5 grams was going to have by just, and impacts with fentanyl on the population. I just remember having amazing conversations with you. So thank you for being a twinkle, a light, when SB 91 was being taken over. You felt you knew what the impacts were going to be. And I just, you and a couple other of the prosecutors really helped and the people of Alaska that were feeling the impacts. And that's who I listened to ultimately. But I have had done ride-alongs with troopers, and by gosh, they have got a tough job and very, very frustrating. And I think it's more than just benefits and resources sometimes, giving them their tools back so they can do their jobs. And even Governor Walker said they stripped the tools from law enforcement, in SB 91, so they feel helpless. And so giving them their tools back, I think, is going to be a super great start in the right direction. And I wanted to say that in L.A., when I looked at criminal justice reform, which I call criminal injustice reform, but anyway, when they ended up doing, we the most similar that I could find, and I haven't got to do extensive research, was in California. And California is outrageous. One of the mayors in California said that after Prop 8, the criminal justice system is so broken, they don't even know how to fix it. It's broken from, you know, from the beginning to the end. And crime is rampant. Drug use is rampant. On Skid Row, there's 60,000 homeless. And a lot of it starts, you know, homelessness, an opioid crisis, you know, it all just starts and just spirals down. So California is just a horrible example of who to follow in regards to criminal justice. So I really hope as independent Alaskans we get our criminal justice and victim-centered justice at hand. And I just wanted to offer you labor and commerce with vehicle theft. We are going to be talking about vehicle theft and how they've had to hire their own guards because they're just done. One agency got 80 thefts, car thefts, at just from one place. And so I just think it's really important to talk about that. And I hopefully I'll be able to talk to Senator Hughes and we can have a joint session in regards to that. But I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm so happy that you are in the position you are. And I think you brought just an outstanding perspective today. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Do you have any final thing you'd like to say before we close out?
Madam, Senator Ryan Boat, Madam through the chair. I essentially look at this appointment as an upside-down org chart. I should be the blocks on the bottom with my boss, who believes the same thing. The commissioner is pretty outstanding gal. What is our drive is how do we support our people to be as capable of being successful, and how do we support others that we work with, because none of what we do happens in a vacuum. We utilize our state, local, and tribal partners in order to get this accomplished, putting tools back in our possession that help us make ourselves successful. And I want to iterate one more thing. When you discussed the $61 million, that's not $61 million, and I know you know this, but I think it needs to be said because this is who we serve and we're public servants. It's $61 million out of the people's pockets themselves. Not government, not anything to do with it, but out of their pockets. And I think at this point in time, that in addition to the fact that we're number one in sexual assaults, is it's time for us to resource us in order to be successful to serve the people. Thank you.
Yes, and those are two key takeaways, I believe, too, for me, this committee hearing. And I'm going to say it's up way above $61 million out of people's pockets mm-hmm. because of therapy costs, insurance rate increases, and all kinds of life impacts. And, we want to give you the tools not only for success, personal success, professional success, but ultimately so you can carry out your mission for the safety of our community. So thank you, and we're going to wrap up. Senator McChickie, did you have a comment before we close out? I'm just trying to be cognizant of your time because I know you have a committee hearing coming up.
I know. This will be very quick, Madam Chair. We didn't get a chance to go through the presentation from the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission, but I guess I'll just ask this question of public safety. Are you willing, as we went through 91 and we were given some data points, just an example is in other states how fewer didn't really talk about the crime rates. They talked about the fewer number of people in jail, but sort of sold it like it was a reduction in crime rates. We know now, because we have fewer people in jail, that there's not a correlation between those two. My question to public safety, you were not free to openly discuss issues you had when we were creating Senate Bill 91, and now it seems like perhaps you are. Are you willing as a department to give us some priorities that you must, that are kind of must-haves in the legislation that will make your jobs easier? I think a lot of the legislation is sort of prosecutor-constructed. We'd like to hear it from the street as well on what your folks, why your folks are most frustrated and how we can help in the legislation that we're hoping to pass this session.
Thank you, and you can chew on that because we're going to have you up again. To be fair, I was about to conclude, but Senator Keel would like to make a statement. I'm going to make the same offer to Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a speech to give. I think there's been some interesting data today and some interesting discussion, and I really look forward to getting some more of the data from the Criminal Justice Commission or whoever is compiling it. I think some of the evidence we have shows some hints about what might work. It's pretty clear that from what we've seen today, that when we cranked up some of the prison sentences on things, we didn't drive down the crimes on things we cranked up prison sentences on. And so there may be places where that works, and I think if there's evidence, we should go right there, any place we can create fewer victims. But when there's not evidence, I'm not sure that's the direction we all want to head. I very much appreciated Captain Case's testimony about what we're putting targeted resources seems to have made a difference in Anchorage, and I think we should take a hard look at where we can extrapolate that and make a real difference and make fewer victims around the state. But I think the captain said it well. A one-size-fits-all approach doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Thank you. Senator Schauer.
Oh, no.
He's ready to go. So with that, that concludes our business today. And on Friday, the committee will continue our work on Senate Bill 12. My office is currently working with members. It's my hope to have a new working document to present to the committee and review. And seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. The time is 3:14 p.m. Thank you all.